Welcome to Jim's BBQ. Can I take your order?
Yeah. Mike probably looked at Liz and was like, Liz, cake! So then this trio of girls shows up.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
My girlfriend left, and I'm riding my tractor.
He probably hates that.
Jim's dating us.
I'm dating both of you?
All of it. He probably has him with Jim's wallet now. All right, well, I'm going to go chop the lobster.
Hi, welcome to episode 70 of Jim's BBQ Podcast. I'm Mike.
I'm Jim.
And I'm Dylan.
Hey, Dylan, how you doing?
Oh, my God, is it on cue?
You're not doing so well, but we'll see if we can get through this episode tonight. You can rely on Jim and I to carry you through this one as you're battling a horrible cold.
Boys and girls.
Such a bad cold.
Yeah. Boys and girls, let it be a lesson to you what happens when you suck dirty cock.
Yeah.
On the way to the parking lot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, we have 5 new Facebook likes.
Wow. Awesome. Yeah. Why do we have 5 new Facebook likes?
I don't know. I just saw a little thing pop up. But it was the post, not the page.
Oh, I see. But, hey, if you want to check everything out about what we're doing and where we're headed, like, for instance, in October, you could check us out at Facebook, facebook.com/JimsBBQPod.
You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at JimsBBQPod.
You can also email us at JimsBBQPod@gmail.com or get the episodes fresh from the grill, so to say, at www.jimsbbqpod.com.
And don't forget, you can also rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Much to Jim's...
a chagrin.
Boulevard. Ever tell you guys how much I hate you?
Wow, I guess this is the end of the podcast.
Have I told you lately that I hate you?
Nice.
Hey, Jim, even though you hate us, I'm just wondering one thing.
Yeah?
What are you drinking tonight?
I actually don't have anything. I had a Jamocha milkshake a little bit ago with my Arby's dinner.
Oh.
That was about it.
Nice.
Nothing exciting tonight.
Well, Dylan, I know you're under the weather, so what are you drinking?
I'm keeping to agua tonight.
Ah, very nice. Oh, in Spanish, no less.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I'm drinking for all 3 of us then tonight. And apparently,
well,
I think
your beer's big enough.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think I picked a big enough beer for all of us. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
So, I am drinking from Jack's Abbey Brewing out of Massachusetts. I'm drinking their Lagerness Monster, which is a Imperial Baltic Porter. It's clocking in at an impressive 15%. It's got nice
That's
notes.
Fucking of, big yeah, beer, man.
It is. It is. And it's a big bottle, too. It's a, what is it? It's like a half a liter or a 1 point. Or
oh, it's
1 pint,
a big one.
Yeah, 1.9 fluid ounces. So it's not like one of the 22s, but it's like just a little bit smaller than one of those. But yeah, it's got nice notes of chocolate, a little booziness. It's drinking really nice. I don't even know how long I've had it, maybe a few months or so. And man, it's a really nice tasting beer. I wish I had a few more bottles of this to put down in the cellar.
Crandall cellar.
Sounds good though.
Yeah, it's most excellent. Well, hopefully, you know, in a couple weeks we'll be able to share some beers with you. You know.
Well, why is that?
Well, you know. I mean, we're headed down to New Jersey way.
Old dirty Jers.
Ding dong.
Yeah, man. I know we're all looking forward to it. I know, I think we got a pretty big plan for, what, an anniversary episode?
I think so. We got some ideas cooking.
Yeah. What's that?
I said, I know we got some ideas. Oh, Jim, sorry.
I said, yeah. It's our anniversary?
Yeah, man. 2 years. 2 years we've been doing this thing. 2 years we've been recording this horseshit.
I was going to say train wreck, but then I was like, it's not that much of a disaster.
It's a beautiful disaster.
I'm about to put another cough drop in.
In where?
You know what? I'll let you answer that for yourself.
Straight up, everybody is white candy ass.
So, well, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys again in person. It's been too long since June.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree, and I'm very much looking forward to this trip. And you know, in a rare instance, Liz is actually traveling with me, so that'll be fun. And I know Jim has got some traveling companions with him, and I know Canadian correspondent Paul Saunders is going to be around, and who knows who else might pop in.
Maybe a cameo from MVP Kit.
Yeah.
Maybe Mary Lou.
Maybe Mary Lou.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. But
maybe Sarah if we wind up in hipster Brooklyn.
Oh, Sarah. That'd be a new one for all of us, wouldn't it?
Who's that?
Anyway, I mean, a pretty big packed episode here for episode 70. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. And but let's get right into it, I think. They released a trailer for the latest Star Wars movie. What are we up to? Episode 8?
Last Jedi.
Yes. And I actually just watched it literally like 5 minutes ago.
Wow.
I had forgotten that it was out there, and remembered we were just kind of chit-chatting before you got on, Jim, and I was like, oh shit, I should watch that. And I actually thought it was pretty cool.
And you gave me shit about watching it.
What's that? I didn't give you any shit for watching it.
No, about making sure I watched it.
Oh, well, because you were talking about how the director, this whole thing about the director telling you not to watch it or whatever.
Yeah,
which, guess what, was completely, like, misconstrued by, you know, the media, just like everything else.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, what else, what haven't they misconstrued lately, you know?
But it is funny because Jim went and he was just like, oh, director said not to watch it. And then you were like, I hate it.
I was being a Sarge.
I'm dying to know why you hated it.
Wait, did you just say I was being a Sarge, or did you really?
I was being a Sarge.
No, I was being a Sarge. Of course I was going to watch it, but I just was giving you guys a hard time.
Well, did you like it?
No, not really. Mostly just because I don't like how it was cut together. I was also at Star Wars Celebration when I seen the first trailer, which was pretty cool, but it was, I don't know, I guess marketing at best, but just the way they cut everything is, you know, with Kylo reaching out to Rey, you know, her saying she needs help, and he's, you know, he's reaching out to her, and him, you know, in his TIE Interceptor saying, oh, well, I gotta end the past, whatever it was, and, you know, he's, like, locking on like he's, you know, going to cry because he's going to kill his mother. And it just, to me, it didn't even give you it had nothing to do with a lead-up or a trailer for the show, like, to get you excited about anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I think that's one of the things that I kind of mentioned to Dylan, is that a lot of it, I think, was, like, deception.
Oh, absolutely, like, and you can tell by the
scene. There were some very deceptive-looking scenes that they kind of interspersed together.
Right.
Like him reaching his hand out, and then they show Rey next after he reaches his hand out.
Yeah, it's but like Rey turns or says something about, I need somebody to help me through all of this, you know, and then Kylo Ren reaches his hand out, and they're completely two different backgrounds.
Oh, yeah. That's what I said.
You know?
Yeah, it's just kind of trying to lead to some intrigue, I think it's what they're going for there.
And I'm sure, and, you know, that's fine or whatever, but to me, when I watched the first one, it felt like it was, like, you know, even though they're trailers and they're short, the first one to me kind of told a story, like, okay, Luke's going to be training Rey, you know, all this stuff, okay, there's supposed to be some more stuff with the, you know, about the Jedi themselves, you know, and gave you a few other snippets, but this one just, to me, was just scattered and just, like, thrown up, like somebody threw up all over it and just threw it on the internet.
It's kind of like they didn't want to let anything really be known.
And that's fine, too. I mean, don't even just release a trailer then at that point. But I don't know. The first one excited me. Like, I was like, oh, man, I can't wait for it. And this one was just kind of, like, very all over the place and very, like you said, misleading, deceptive, whatever, which was, I'm sure, what they were going for. But still, it just didn't leave me satisfied when I was finished with it.
All right. I know one thing you did have to like out of this trailer.
The Porg?
That little sloth guy that was riding around in the Millennium Falcon with Chewbacca.
The Porg?
The what?
Yeah, I don't know how I feel. They're called Porgs, Mike.
Oh, no, it's a little sloth. I'm owning it.
Okay. That's nice. Fine, too.
We're gonna call that one Dylan.
Nice.
What, really? You're not gonna call it, like, Pepper? Like, that's clearly Mike and Pepper in the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, I thought it was like me and Dylan in the Millennium Falcon.
Is that what I sound like when I ride in the car with you?
Yeah.
Is that what I sounded like when you picked me up from my friend's place in Rochester the one time?
Oh my god, that was a clusterfuck.
It wasn't a clusterfuck. I still got in the car.
Yeah.
I just smelled really bad.
Oh boy, I thought I was gonna have to pull over somewhere. Well, that's another story for another time. We may have already told that story.
We already have. Yeah. But, I mean, I thought it was cool. Like, I got excited. I was like, oh, sweet, new Star Wars trailer. But I also felt like it was also nothing that... I wasn't really surprised by anything I saw in the trailer. I'm like, I everything they did, it didn't, like, shock me. Like, I'm not surprised they had some scene of Kylo, like, attacking the ship and there's, oh, is he gonna kill Leia? I mean, I'll be like, I don't know, like, if he kills his mother, I'd be like, eh. Because
yeah.
I have a pretty good feeling she's gonna eat it in the movie.
Well, I mean
they gotta have to.
They're kind of in a corner there, Dylan.
No, I know. But the stuff with Luke and Rey looks pretty cool, though. I'm just jazzed to see Mark Hamill again. But like not a lot of Finn and Poe.
Did I mistakenly see like Finn with a lightsaber?
No, it was one of those
like remember that prod things.
Remember that thing that he fought against the stormtrooper in the first in 7?
No, I probably gotta watch that one again.
It's I don't know what it is. It's like a.
It's basically a big cattle prod.
Yeah, like a.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know how it resisted the lightsaber in the first one, but that
I mean there are things that can resist lightsabers that are not lightsabers.
Like what?
Dylan's like, cock.
Yeah. No, like force fields and stuff. Shields. They can't lightsaber can't cut through a shield.
You sure about that?
Pretty sure. I mean, I never saw them. Remember in episode 1 when they're having the fight with Darth Maul and he can't cut through the shield with his saber.
Yeah, remember okay. the whatchamacallit, the roller droid things? God, fuck, what are they called?
The destroyer droids?
Destroyer droids. They had force.
But they never cut through them. They just put their force fields up.
Yeah, they put their force fields up and fucked them up with the saber.
No, they didn't. I don't remember that ever happening in the movies. That scene with Darth Maul always made me, like, I always scratch my head. I'm like, why didn't he just, like, cut off the friggin', like, mechanisms to turn off the shields?
Yeah, they probably could have.
It didn't really look like they were that far away.
I bet you the saber still would have went through the shield. It's just he probably couldn't.
I don't remember it bouncing off, but whatever.
I don't know. I'm going to have to go back and watch it.
Yeah, like, I really need to go back and watch that fucking turd.
Well.
Quick, let's watch all 7.
Nice. I watched it not too long ago, probably 2 months ago, and I had a better appreciation for it.
I think I've said this before, I have a better appreciation for that movie than I do for the second one.
I'd agree with that.
It's not a lot, but I still like it better than the second one. But I mean, yeah, I'm excited to see it, regardless.
Have you guys read the fan theories about how Jar Jar Binks is Sith?
Yeah, they're fucking stupid.
They're funny as hell, though.
They're funny to read, but they're stupid.
Yeah, like, but...
They should not be taken seriously.
No, but I get a good chuckle out of them. Good times.
Ridiculous.
No.
Yeah.
Alright, we ready to get into the...
meat of the episode?
Well, did you want to talk about your adventure this weekend or no?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Sorry, just like everything, like I'm just feeling so shitty. It's like that's kind of what's been weighing down on me. Yeah, definitely. We can talk about it. So Sunday for my birthday, well, Saturday, preceding that, my mom took me to go see the Psychedelic Furs, which was pretty cool. You guys know who the Psychedelic Furs are, right?
Yep.
I've heard the name. I don't know the music really.
Pretty in Pink.
Okay.
Like they did the song called Pretty in Pink.
Like for like the movie or whatever?
Actually, they did not record it for the movie.
Oh, okay.
They recorded it separately. Fun fact. But we went to go see them Saturday. And then Sunday, I went into Brooklyn, as I do. And
had brunch.
Did not have... Well, actually, we had bagels. So I guess that qualifies. And Sarah Brooklyn and I went brunch. To go see... Huh?
The Brooklyn Brunch.
The Brooklyn Brunch. And Sarah and I went to go see Kaiju Big Battle. You guys know what that is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
So for those,
why don't you describe it for the listeners?
For those of you out there, I know there's a lot of you.
Henry.
Yeah, Henry. Kaiju Big Battle BTV, is... Man. What was the... I don't know. I used the incorrect word to describe it, and I don't want to use this word, but I don't know. I guess Junior League, would that be an appropriate way to describe it?
They usually call it, like, independent.
All right, independent works. It's an independent wrestling organization that's kind of exactly what it sounds like. It's people dress up as kaiju, big monsters, and have a wrestling match on a wrestling ring.
Were the rings bigger? Like,
no, they're not bigger. It's probably, like, the size of your average wrestling thing. And, there's, like, this crazy storyline involved with it, just like there is in regular wrestling. And, you know, all the characters are ridiculous. I mean, you got people like the Silver Potato and is it called the Giant Waffle? It's literally just a dude, and his costume is just a big fucking waffle.
Wow.
The main bad guy is Dr. Cube. Yeah. He has a cube for a head with a frowny face on it. Sorry, that was my cough drop. Who else was there? Unicorn Party. He had a confetti gun, this big squid dude, and like a mutant duck, and all kinds of crazy guy. Tiki Rilla was a gorilla with a tiki face.
Huh.
And it was just crazy. Like it was ridiculous, and I guess.
Well, I'm sure it was entertaining though.
Oh, it was super entertaining. And, like, you guys know I'm a huge fan of Godzilla movies. So, for me, I was like, this is fucking great. You know, it was just ridiculous. And it was right on the heels of New York Comic Con. So, I think that it tied into it somehow. Like, I know they had been doing advertising for it at the event. We got our tickets for it, like, you know, like a couple months ago, I think.
Oh, so they probably drew a pretty good crowd for it then.
Oh, yeah, it was great. I had a blast. I had so much fun watching it. Like, I got my picture taken with the Silver Potato. Here, I'll put it up in our chat real quick so you guys...
You sent it to us.
Oh, did I already? Okay, I couldn't remember.
Yeah. Yeah, that costume was pretty freaking amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. That dude kicked ass, man. He was awesome. So, but yeah, we had a great time. I mean, I really got into it, too, which I didn't think I was going to. Like, I was... chanting, cheering, booing, you know, it was pretty great.
Look at that. We need to bring him to a WWE event now.
I said to Sarah, I said, you know, I might be convinced to go to a WWE or event.
You know, I don't know how Mike feels about it or whatever, but he'll probably agree with me. You know, I've watched it since I can remember. So, I mean, I've watched wrestling forever, but... It is one of the most entertaining things out there, and if you go into it to be entertained, you will be entertained. If, you know, the people that are like, oh, wrestling sucks, or it's dumb, or it's fake, of course it's fucking fake, but they're still athletes, and they take a beating. It doesn't matter if it's scripted or not. They still they're still phenomenal athletes. I mean, even like the guys you just seen, Dylan. It's as far as I'm concerned, it's one of the best forms of entertainment out there.
Yeah, I mean, WWE. It's cool to see. Like, the television show can be a little bit weird live, like if you go to see, like, Raw or SmackDown or whatever.
It is,
because it's just, because they do so much, like, backstage and stuff that you can't really hear very well because it's mic'd for television as opposed to mic'd for the audience in the arena. So it's kind of, that aspect's kind of strange. Now, what is fun is, like, they'll do, like, just shows where it's just for, like, the people that are there live. And those are a lot of fun because then, like, the matches might be a little bit longer and the guys get to almost, you know, like how, like, when you see a comedian, they kind of, like, if it's not like a television show, like, they're not recording it for television, they kind of stretch out a little bit with, like, some of their jokes and storytelling and stuff like that. These guys do the same thing. When it's not on television, they get to stretch out a bit.
Yeah, and they get to do
a bit more.
Like you said, comedians,
this,
too.
This was a live stream, if I remember correctly.
Right, right. Well, when it's like an independent league, they tend to take it to like the outer boundaries anyway. Of like it's a little bit of a longer format for the most part. Or the ones I've seen, like the matches might be a bit longer than what you would see on watching like a WWE show. See, like I haven't seen Kaiju, but I've seen like a bunch of different like independent events, and some of them are really cool. Like Ring of Honor, I really enjoy. Actually, I'm going to see Ring of Honor tomorrow night, and they're doing like a co-promotional thing with a Japanese league, so they got a bunch of the Japanese guys coming out.
When are you seeing it?
Tomorrow night.
Oh, I thought I heard you say tonight. I think the audio just got a little squashed. I was like, but you're recording with us.
No, it's tomorrow night. I'm going with my dad. It'll be fun.
Very cool.
And then there's other ones like, like Ring of Honor runs in New York regularly. That might be one for you to go see. It's a little bit more athletic, even than WWE. Other ones that are really like almost comic book based, and they also run in and around New York and New Jersey, and I think down in Philly a lot. There's one called Chikara.
Yeah, they actually talked about Chikara.
Yeah, there's one called Chikara, and it's really cool. I've seen one show of theirs, and it's just amazing. Like it's so much fun. It's kind of geared a little bit towards children in that like they tell the audience not to swear. And the people entertaining you, the wrestlers and other people, are kind of told the same thing, but it's entertaining enough for adults to enjoy it too.
Yeah, so there were no kids, so.
Huh, I'm surprised at that. I think that would maybe be fun for them, especially considering it was like during the day. The one time
it wasn't really during the day. It was at 5 o'clock.
Okay, well, by comparison, the one time I had a chance to see them perform the Kaiju, the show started. I didn't go to it. I had too many other things. It was like during the WrestleMania weekend. They started their show at 12:30 at night.
Oh yeah. That's no way to say.
And you're talking they're going to run like a 2 or 3 hour show.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, by comparison, that's during the day. That's almost like a matinee for those guys. Are you kidding?
Yeah, again, it might have had something to do with it being involved with Comic-Con, but mm-hmm. I don't know. Regardless, I mean, I can't say it enough times. Like, I had such a good time watching it. And what was so funny was almost like how quickly I got into it. And I kind of stopped and said to myself, like, damn, I got into that really quick. And apparently, you know, that's just kind of what happens. Like, that's what Sarah said to me. It just was like, you know, people just get into it. They start cheering. They start really digging it.
Yeah. Did she enjoy the show?
Oh, yeah. She loved it.
Cool.
You know, but I think this is not the first time she's gone, so.
I think I saw, like, didn't she, like, write some article or something about it?
Possibly.
I thought I... Oh, man, I swear I saw something.
Fuck, man. That's what I should have done.
I don't know. Totally, I mean, yeah. But,
Regardless, A-plus birthday present.
Cool.
Who got you that birthday present?
It's something unique, too, you know? I mean, it's not just like, oh, here's a sweater I got you, you know? This is like, let's do this. This is fun.
Who got you that birthday present there, Dylan?
Huh?
Who got you that birthday present?
What, the sweater?
No, the tickets.
I already said Sarah got them.
Why'd you ask that, Jim?
I didn't think he mentioned it earlier.
I did. I'll mention it again.
We'll find out in the editing process, I guess.
All right, let's get that out of the way.
So now we can get into the real meat of this whole episode.
Yeah, the heavy part.
The heavy part. Oh, yes. The heavy part. We did something, I guess, that it took quite a bit of homework, I would say, on all of our parts, right?
Yeah, and not all of it was fun.
Some of it was a little trying at times. but I think the end results will be well worth it for the discussion we have and for the listeners, really, right?
I hope so.
So
that's the plan.
I think we kind of discussed this a couple episodes ago that we were going to kind of go over the studio album output of a band that we all have enjoyed over the years, Metallica.
Yes. And before we get into it, probably not the last time we'll do this, because we're going to try to find other bands that the three of us enjoy and go through their discography.
Certainly. Yep.
So, but we decided to start with, you know, kind of a meatball, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, a band that's got quite the career behind them thus far, and lots of albums to for us to go through. But I think
10, 11, if you count one of them, but which I thought was like a good amount, but not an overwhelming amount. You know, it wasn't like we decided, hey, let's listen to, you know, all of Stevie Wonder's discography.
Right. Or the other one that I thought of today that would have been would be like really immense would be like Aerosmith.
Yeah, no, which I don't really like Aerosmith anyway. So
well, it was just for instance, like Aerosmith would be very daunting, or Bob Dylan would be.
Yeah.
It'd just be a very daunting task to listen to every single album that Bob Dylan has released. Not that I really care for Bob Dylan, but it was a good example of like a band that would be pretty, or a band or artist that would be pretty difficult to listen to. I think if we do like someone like that has like quite the output, we might have to like limit it down to like maybe
like 10 albums.
I was gonna say 3 to 6 albums.
Yeah, you know, or like maybe like peak albums of their eras,
right,
so to speak, or and maybe just like some notorious albums if they put out some like really bad ones. Just to see what they're all about. Other like bands like Stone Temple Pilots or Alice in Chains would probably be good contenders too, because their discographies aren't like massive, but they, you know, they're pretty well known bands.
Sure.
So, but enough about them.
Right. So let's get into Metallica,
we're not discussing, you know, the politics and the hullabaloo. I mean, I'm sure it'll come up at some point, but you know, this isn't like let's rail on Lars for an hour about Napster, or you know, how much.
You mean we're not gonna talk about how they cut their hair?
Back yeah, in we're like not. 96. Yeah, they got rid of the Metallo locks.
Yeah, I don't know. Jim might want to.
Nice. Metallo locks.
Yeah. So without further ado,
James got rid of his porn stash.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah!
I think that's what he used to say to women.
That or the Kool-Aid Man. He said that a lot, too.
He'd be a great Kool-Aid Man.
Yeah.
We're going to start from the beginning.
Yeah. Let's start right at the beginning. So, Kill 'Em All was their first album, right?
Yeah. Yep. So, I had not listened to Kill 'Em All in probably, I mean, for me, I think since college.
Wow. Okay.
Which was probably, I don't know, that was like four or five, that was probably 4 or 5 years ago, the last time I actually listened to it all the way through. And I'm just going to bring up the Wikipedia page here.
So before you get too far into the Wikipedia page, there is a fun fact that I kind of knew but had forgotten about. So the bulk of that album was recorded right here in Rochester, New York.
Yeah, actually, I think a couple of albums were recorded in Rochester, if I'm not mistaken.
Get out of here.
I know some of the early ones, they actually went over to Europe and recorded them, like after Kill 'Em All, because they liked whatever studio they worked in. They liked there was a studio that they found that they really enjoyed over in Europe. But I'm really curious, Dylan, what do you think? I mean, all these years later, and I'll agree with you, I haven't listened to Kill 'Em All like in its entirety in probably quite some time. I mean, I've heard some of the, you know, the various songs over the years, you know, here and there, or, you know, like doing the old iPod shuffle, or just hearing some of those tracks live, you know, from live albums or what have you. But what do you think of the album itself?
Well, I mean, I think it's a pretty great album, personally. I think that for that to be their debut, that's an excellent debut album for them, because it came out at a good time for metal, because you hadn't heard anything like that, really. And it had that very, I don't want to use the term grungy, because it sounds like you're just talking about grunge, but it did have that very, like, you know,
rough,
recorded in the garage kind of sound to it. Yeah.
I was going to say raw.
It's very raw. It's very, very raw. So, and I will say that it does take a lot from bands like Blitzkrieg and Diamond Head, which I know were big influences on Metallica. I mean, they even have a cover of the song Am I Evil by Diamond Head on, like, on one of the releases of it. And I know that's, it was one of their biggest ones. But, I mean, I think there's some really, like, kick-ass songs, you know, like Jump in the Fire, Whiplash, Seek and Destroy. You know, those are all really great songs. I just think that they did emulate some of their influences pretty strongly on this album, which I don't think is bad, but you could definitely tell they were like, we love these bands, and we wish these bands were, like, bigger. So they kind of took, like, that sound, but then threw in the thrashiness of it, which was good, and like, I personally really like it. And also, I think the cover is great too. Like, it's just really simplistic. It's very ominous.
It actually wasn't even the original cover.
Is it really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't release it, but they had another cover intended for it. I know you jumped out to that Wikipedia page.
It's not on there, but
I thought I saw that on there, actually.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's
fucking Metal Up Your Ass?
Yeah.
Was that the original name of the album?
Yeah, it was going to be the Metal Up Your Ass, the classic. And they released I know they released at least a shirt with this logo on it, with the toilet and the knife coming out of the toilet.
So, all right, I think if they had released this album as Metal Up Your Ass, I think it probably, they would not, this would, it wouldn't have worked. Because it just wouldn't. It just seems very silly, and, like, I'm looking at the logo right now, and it has, like, that very, like, kind of, like, it's kind of awesome. Like, that chrome logo, that's very, like, Judas Priest-like. I think it's funny. I think it's a great little tidbit that I'm glad still it kind of exists and people can kind of laugh at it now, but I don't think the band would have experienced the same kind of success as this, because this almost has, like, you know, it's very, like, hair metal.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about it is it would have, I mean, after the fact, not at the point that the album got released, but when they started to get, like, you know, bigger and bigger, it would have been very tough for them to get that album into stores to sell.
Yeah, it would have been tough.
Well, at that time, yeah.
I always kind of thought that the Kill 'Em All, going back to, like, the actual original album, or the actual album cover they used, it almost had, like, a I almost want to say, like, almost like a Soviet type thing to it. I don't know why. Like, almost like the hammer and sickle thing.
I always thought the same thing.
I know. I agree.
I don't know what it was. I mean, I realize that it's like the hand and the hammer and the blood.
I think it's the red and the hammer.
Yeah, yeah, I kind of agree with that. A little fun personal fun fact is I actually had the Metal Up Your Ass shirt.
Oh, that's great! I would love to have that shirt.
I grew out of it like after college, so I don't even know where it is now, but. I think it might exist somewhere, like in a tote down in my basement, but it's long past its prime of me ever wearing it. Liz is always threatening to make like a quilt out of like some of those awesome like rock concert shirts that they
have. You should have her do
it. I was like, I'm all for it.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Because there's like people that do that shit, you know that?
Yeah, definitely. I've seen things online, people that have done it. You know, even the what you said, Dylan, I mean, you left out a couple big ones, too. Like, you know, Four Horsemen, Anesthesia, you know, No Remorse.
Metal Militia.
Yeah, I mean, that...
So you just named pretty much the entire album.
But you think about... But, I don't know, to me, almost every song but, like, one or two on there... this is one of them albums, though, you can just listen to from start to finish.
See, now, I enjoy the album. I think it's good. I think it definitely, like, it kind of speaks to what you said, Dylan, where, like, they relied a lot on their influences. It shows this band in its infancy, though. Like, it shows, like, there's still, like, so much more room for this band to grow.
Well, yeah, it sets the stage for them.
Yeah, yeah. And I think one of the key things about this band as far as growing is if, like, you look at the songwriting credits on this album... You know, Hetfield and Lars have a lot of the songwriting credits, and then Dave Mustaine. There's one key name missing from it, and he didn't come into it until, you know, like, they had written a lot of this stuff, was Cliff Burton.
Also, Kirk Hammett.
Well, Kirk Hammett, but he came into it a little bit later in, after a lot of the stuff had been written already.
Well, yeah, because he had replaced
Dave Mustaine
because of the personal problems they were having with him.
Right. But
who doesn't have personal problems with Dave Mustaine?
We'll get into Cliff Burton, I think. I want to really talk about him when we get into Ride the Lightning. Because I think that really started to... That album was where he really started to shine for this band. Because the songwriting took, like, went to a whole new level when they got to Ride the Lightning and beyond.
Yeah, so while I
was just gonna say I appreciate what this album did and what it was, but I also think that they were, and they were on the right path, but man, what they ended up with beyond this one was amazing.
Well, I would say it's like, if I were like the record company executive, I'd say, this album is great. Now what else you got for me?
I think what else they had for him is the next album, which fucking kicked ass.
Well, yeah. So,
but
I will say, I will say this, though, that this album does feature an instrumental. And I got to say, I fucking love Metallica's instrumentals when they do good ones. And Anesthesia, I mean, I like it. It's definitely not my favorite, but I do like when they do instrumentals. I will say that one thing that does date this album is that there is a hilarious line. I think it's in Metal Militia. I don't know. I'm probably gonna lose some metal cred for this, but like, there's where they say like, we are Metallica and something something. Like they basically like declare themselves as the band within the song.
Yeah,
it's Whiplash, right?
Which is actually, like, I highlighted, like, two songs as my favorites. Whiplash and The Four Horsemen are the two that really stood out to me listening back to it as, like, ones that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, like, it just, this line kind of makes me laugh. It's like, we'll never quit because we're Metallica. Which is like, hey, they never did. I know they almost did at one point, but it's just kind of, it's a bit of a dated lyric, you know, when they kind of are self-referential. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it could be worse. You could have been like Bad Company.
And put
a song called Bad Company on an album called Bad Company by a band Bad Company.
Nice. Well, that's like Iron Maiden doing the song Iron Maiden on the album Iron Maiden, except that song kicks ass.
Yeah. I do like the song Bad Company. Don't get me wrong. But
even to your point,
Jim,
too,
did you have any other comments?
No, I was going to say I agree with Mike. I think my favorite song on the album is Four Horsemen.
Although, I mean, I mentioned Whiplash. The reason why I really like Whiplash is, believe it or not, and this might be a rarity to say this, is Lars's drums on that are just amazing.
I will say Lars's drums did sound very good on this, and that might have been, but that might because the album is so much of an infant album for them.
Right. Okay, so I mean, you kind of said it, Jim. You said what I was hoping you would.
What was your favorite song on the album, Dylan?
I do like Hit the Lights. That's a good one.
You haven't mentioned Phantom Lord yet. That's the only one you guys haven't mentioned.
I like Phantom Lord. I do like Phantom Lord as well.
I like the whole album. It's great.
The whole album is great. But, sorry, I cut you off. What were you saying, Mike?
No, I mean, I was just going to kind of jump us into, speaking of jumping into the fire, jump right into Ride the Lightning. Because, I mean, you mentioned something I was hoping you were going to say. Like, it kind of led to greater things. And I think that the greater things. What's that?
That's the greatest thing.
Yeah, I think Kill 'Em All, like I said, Kill 'Em All set the stage. This put them on the map, and this launched them.
And the one thing I wanted to mention about this is that, and I kind of alluded to this, was Cliff Burton. He had so much, his hands were on this album so much, it was ridiculous, like as far as like the writing credits go and stuff like that, and how they kind of used acoustic guitars and melodies and stuff like that, that these guys weren't really using on the first album.
I often wonder what the band would be like if Cliff was still alive.
You know, and that was going to be a kind of a question I was going to ask, and I don't know. I don't know what it would be. You got to wonder what would their output have been like after Master of Puppets. You know what I'm saying? I mean, what would they have done? Would they have done some of the stuff that they did? Were any of those things in the works? You know, already. You know, you get what I'm saying?
No, I mean, totally get what you're saying.
In fact, but I seen them live for this album. I think I was 11 years old. My cousins took me. And I remember them walking around afterwards, handing out cassettes, just giving mm-hmm. them to people, saying, hey, listen to our stuff. Listen to it. Give it to your friends. You know, all that stuff.
Not even asking for money?
Nope, no money. No money at all. They just wanted you to listen to it and pass it on to another person.
That's the amazing thing is at the point that they released Ride the Lightning, they weren't even signed to a major label. It was 2 months after it got released that they signed with Elektra.
That is true. But in my opinion, I mean, they stepped it up to like, they turned it up to 11 if we're going to go with the music fucking references. And I think the eight songs on the album I think it's a perfect length for this kind of album. Some of the songs are longer than, 4 minutes, but they don't feel longer than 4 minutes to me. Does it make any sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It does, because they kind of, they just flow really well.
I think every song on this album is, in my opinion, like they're great. They're phenomenal songs.
I think with
like,
this one, too.
Like, they don't feel bloated.
No, but with this one, too, like you said, Dylan, how they're longer, it doesn't feel like it. You get into it and it goes by, but it's almost like each song tells its own story too in this one.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Which I think has a lot of Cliff in it with the storytelling.
Definitely. I mean, and just for, Fight Fire with Fire is such a great way to open up your album. And then to close out with the Call of Cthulhu that song is so good.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because one of my notes that I put on this album or about this album was like the last two songs, Creeping Death and Call of Cthulhu, like, are like the perfect like two closing songs for this album. Like those, just those two songs right at the end. I don't know what it was. Like, I'm listening to it, I'm going, oh my God, like these two songs, like right at the end, were like perfect. Like it just made sense to me. Like, as I was listening back to it all these years later, you know, again, for the first time in a long while that I'd actually listened to this album in full, but those two songs, like right at the end, were, I was like, this was like perfect.
It's funny. They go great together. Even like Trapped Under Ice followed by Escape, that almost has like a little thematic thing to it. And then, like, For Whom the Bell Tolls, Fade to Black, you know, Ride the Lightning, they're clearly all about death to some extent.
And actually, this album contains my favorite song, and you just mentioned it. Was my favorite Metallica song overall is actually For Whom the Bell Tolls.
I love that song. That being said, I think I actually like Fade to Black better, because Fade to Black is just so different than what you heard on the last, on Kill 'Em All.
Yes.
And it just, that intro is just so fucking cool.
It is. It's really interesting. It shows like some of the progression in the songwriting from the first album to the second album. It is a great song. It just, I mean, it's just like a personal preference type thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really just like that bass opening and everything. I just love everything about that song, and like just like kind of like the groove of it. I just really dig For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Oh, it's a kick-ass song too. It would be up there in some of their best. So I just think this is an ace album. There's nothing wrong with it. It definitely deserves, you know, all like the accolades that it gets.
Yeah, I don't even think there's a point in mentioning the songs on it, because this, again, another album you can listen to start to finish, and every single song on here is fucking awesome. Or at least, right. You know, Kill 'Em All, there's some, like, whatever, in between or whatever, but this one is, every single one is fucking great.
And, like, again, like, great album artwork. Now they have, like, the big Chrome logo, but it kind of works.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit more of that, like, how you kind of, it kind of made me laugh, like, when you said the Judas Priest thing. This one has that almost Judas Priest-esque type thing going on.
But in this instance, I think it works, because Kill 'Em All, like I said, I'm glad they went with the other cover, because that has a much more unique feel to it, like almost like, you know, like a very DIY sort of look up to it, whereas this is like, we're fucking metal now. We're in the metal scene. We're playing metal. Like, I think it's deserved.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with you. So, I mean, if Ride the Lightning wasn't enough, you then move on to Master of Puppets.
No, you got to figure, too, that with these two, you've got an album 84, 85, or what, no, was it 83, 84, 85?
Master of Puppets was 86, and Kill 'Em All was 84.
Ride the Lightning.
84,
was
85.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Ride the Lightning was 84.
So it was like three albums in like what, like 4 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty impressive output. I mean, and it just seemed like they just kept plugging away, and the songwriting was, you know, just, you know, it wasn't like they were It wasn't like they were just putting shit out to put it out. You know what I mean? Like the stuff they were putting out was actually pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
I think overall, I actually like Master of Puppets as, you know, like, it's probably my favorite of anything they've done. I mean, Ride the Lightning's right there though. I mean, it's tough to discern between those two as far as, which one is best out of those two, but I think they really peaked right at Master of Puppets.
I do love Master of Puppets as well. Again, eight tracks long, all of them flow really well. I will say that I do think that it is a little more approachable than Ride the Lightning. I think Ride the Lightning still has a very aggressive edge to it. Like, I always feel like James Hetfield is just spitting in my face when he's singing on that album.
I love that edge that Lightning has.
That's what I was gonna say.
Like Lightning still has kind of like James still has like almost that a little bit of that youthful exuberance. Whereas it was more like I don't give a fuck. Master of Puppets sounds more adult.
Yes, it's a more maturing album.
Yes.
It's tough to pick which I think is the better album, but I do overall go with Ride the Lightning because I think it is more, I guess, nuanced is the right word.
No, I agree. I think Lightning just slightly out, not by much, but just enough to think I like Lightning better.
So, as far as Master of Puppets go, what are the tracks that stand out for you? I mean, for me, I mean the title track, Master of Puppets, is amazing. And then the other one that I really enjoy off this one is The Thing That Should Not Be.
I was just going to say, that's probably my favorite song off the album. That's a kick-ass song. It's obvious, like, a very obvious H.P. Lovecraft
reference. Definitely. Yeah.
Because Cliff Burton was big into H.P. Lovecraft. I know he didn't write this song, but he definitely brought the influence onto the band.
Yeah, I was going to say, there had to be some influence there.
I think Battery opened it up pretty strong. I like
Battery. Oh, most definitely, yeah. I mean,
I like Battery
a lot. Yeah.
Master of Puppets, like you said, the namesake of the album was great. And love Damage Inc.
I was going to say, I really like Leper Messiah.
That's a good one.
Even if it is a little funny when James Hetfield's like, Leper Messiah! I can't really do it because of my throat, but...
Oh, yeah.
And Orion's a great instrumental.
We know you like your instrumentals.
He does.
So I was waiting for you to bring that one up.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's tough not to say this. This is a great album, you know. It's deserving of being the one that really put him on the spot.
Right.
I mean, some really good accolades too. I mean, first thrash metal album to be certified platinum, and like the album cover is awesome.
No, I didn't see them back in the day then, but like the stage setup that they had for, I remember seeing like videos of it, like the tour where they had like all the crosses on the stage and shit.
Yeah.
That stuff was dope, man. That was fucking amazing that they were able to pull that off.
Again,
I mean, it was very simplistic, but it was actually pretty cool at the same time.
What, 30 years ago too?
Yeah.
Now, was this... No, it's not. This was not when they were going to go on tour with Guns N' Roses.
No, that's a little further down the line.
Because we all know how that turned out.
Swimmingly.
That's a word for it.
You know, I had a chance to go see that tour, and I passed up on it. I don't even know why. I'm a little disappointed at myself.
Yeah, I remember Monsters of Rock, where they were there. Van Halen... Was there? I can't remember who everybody was, but I think it was Monsters of Rock 88.
Maybe. Oh, this album is last year was deemed culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress.
Right on.
That's pretty cool. And deserve it, because the album is fucking fantastic.
Indeed.
So, unfortunately, that ended up being the last studio album with Cliff Burton.
Right.
Yeah. R.I.P. Cliff. What a fucking waste.
Yeah, yeah. You like you said earlier, you wonder what could have been. You wonder what they would have become, you know.
With Cliff Burton in the band, if he would have stayed in the band.
Well, yeah. I mean, if he had a choice to, you know, not die.
No. I mean, like, would he have lasted in the band? You know, like, would?
Yeah, Man, you know what? I think they would have. I think they would have lasted for quite a while with him. And I could have seen like probably a different progression of where they went. You know, like
absolutely, it would have been different.
I think it would have been much different.
I mean, maybe some of the stuff that they did on the next album would have happened, but it may have been a bit different than what it was.
which that album being And Justice for All, which is interesting. I like this album.
I've got to say, my favorite album out of all of them, and mostly just because my eighth grade year, or grade eight as they'd say in Canada, but...
Wait, this is like your all-time favorite out of all the Metallica albums?
Yeah, and I think it's mostly because of the memories. Remember how we've talked about how,
okay,
you know, certain songs or certain, you know, it'll bring you back or whatever?
Sure.
There were just, like, you know, that whole eighth grade year before, you know, going into high school, you know, different things. There's so many changes going on in general. And I listened to that album all the fucking time, me and my one buddy Pat, and Pat Donlin, and
Pat,
nice, but it just held a special spot for me. Do I think it's their best album? No, but it's my favorite one, just mostly because of how much
for personal stuff,
right?
Than
how much it
else.
Meant to me, or how much it brings back.
I get that. That's actually pretty cool. That's a good reason for that to be like a favorite type thing, yeah, because it kind of holds like a personal connection to you.
Exactly.
I mean, I dig what they did on it. Do I think it's? I mean, I don't think it's not my favorite by any stretch. Some of it's good. Some of it feels to me, and that's just me, feels a little bloated.
I agree. I think some of the songs are way too long.
Yeah.
For what they are, you know, because I am a guy that listens to a lot of metal bands that do like long songs, but you know, then there's like six or seven songs on the album, so like the album length is sort of made up, you know, right. Makes up for like the lack of tracks, but some of the stuff is like it's kind of uninteresting at times.
Right.
You know, I do like One. I do think that's a really great song. And if I remember correctly, I think I said like Blackened really felt like a more like a Pantera song, if anything.
Hmm. The one I really dig, and I think it's because I've heard it live several times, is Harvester of Sorrow.
I like that one too. I think.
It's funny though, because
it felt like they were just trying to follow up with like the success of Master, but kind of throw in those diverse notes from Ride the Lightning, and I'm not really sure it worked. Probably because they didn't have Cliff Burton to like kind of bring it together.
It's funny I picked Harvester out, you know, as like one that really stood out to me listening back to it. It's actually the second shortest song on the album. I don't know if that necessarily played into it and why I really enjoyed it, or if it was just like all the previous experiences I've had with that song. I mean, granted, I've listened to this album several times, you know, over the years, but if it kind of felt like it was, it just kind of felt more natural to me than any of the other ones, I think. One of the other things I was going to mention about this one that was, I think, kind of unique was it actually yielded their first music video. Back when that was a thing.
One.
Yeah. Which that video creeped me the fuck out, man.
What did it use? Like, it used footage from Johnny Get Your Gun, right?
Yeah.
Like, paraplegic? Is that what he is?
Well, I think
quadriplegic. Paraplegic.
Yeah, I mean that.
Like, no arms, no legs.
Yeah, would you rather fuck a chick with no arms or no legs?
Huh. Always comes back to that, huh?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's from like, Johnny Got His Gun, which was like a film from the 1971.
Like I said, this one's got a special spot for me, but I fucking love every song on the album again. Like you guys are right. I think there's a lot of different carryovers from previous albums. I think there's a lot of things they tried different, but I think it was a segue, big segue into the Black album, though, too.
Yeah, you want to talk about going, like, off the beaten path to something that's different. I think the Black album was truly, like a vast departure from And Justice for All or anything really prior to it.
Very much so, but it worked though too. It was still good. And now that's another album. It's not, you know, nowhere near like Injustice was for me, but there's so many memories with that one again, you know.
Yeah, this was actually my gateway album to Metallica. Like, I had really no notion of them. I mean, I knew of them, but I really didn't ever listen to them until this album. I mean, I was of that age that where, like, MTV played, like, a slight influence in what I would listen to.
Right.
And, I mean, the videos that they were playing of, like, you know, Sandman and Wherever I May Roam and The Unforgiven, you know, those really kind of played to, you know, Sad But True. Those kind of played to, you know, me. And I was just like, oh, wow, this is some really cool shit. And, you know, that's what really got me into them was, you know, honestly, the videos.
Well, you figure, too, I mean, they really took advantage of any type of marketing or any, you know, media or whatever, you know, meaning the videos that they had at their disposal. I mean, at that point, too, I mean, you very, and I mean, I had listened to them since, you know, Kill 'Em All.
Right.
But, you know, I think I was probably, I was under 10. And my older cousins had a huge influence on my music taste, but at this point, you know, you never seen or heard anything about them. Like you said, one was a video, and everybody's like, "Oh, did you see that? You know, one video or whatever." But this one, they were starting to appear on TV. They were on interviews. They were showing up on talk shows. You know, how many songs off the album were a video? This is the first time they really started getting out of there where, like yourself, like you said, Mike, I think people just started picking it up and then going, all right, I dig these guys, and picking up the other stuff. And, you know, I don't know how much people liked it because it really was different, but.
Yeah,
it was Metallica for the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Justice for All actually kind of kicked that off in one respect, in that the fact that they did get nominated for a Grammy for that album. That they lost to Jethro Tull was another story, but the fact that that album like reached that level that they got nominated for a Grammy for, even though they lost it, kind of gave them like a little bit of a push, and that they became kind of more known in all sorts of different circles.
People were more aware of them.
Yeah, and then I mean the fact that then they also put a video out for one of the songs. Was just, you know, it kind of put them over the edge. And then when they put this out, it was like, you know, it just blew up for them.
Well, you figure, I mean,
That's why they ended up on that tour with Guns N' Roses that you just spoke of.
Yeah, but you think about it too, though. The one video, like you said, it was pretty creepy. But, you know, at that point, think about the videos and the artists and musicians and stuff that had videos on MTV up to that point. You know, and I don't know, was Ricky Rockman's, God, what was it called?
His show? Headbangers Ball.
Was that around. Was that around at that point, though? Or was it after that?
Oh, that ran for, like, a good long time. That ran way past what you would think it ran for.
Yeah, that was the only show I really watched on MTV was Headbangers Ball, but it just...
I remember, like, just getting home from school. Like, I mean, when the Black Album came out, I mean, that was, like, 91. So I was, like, 14, 15 years old, you know, around that age. We would just flip on MTV just to see what albums or, you know, what songs they were playing. You know, for every, you know, like, they would be playing Metallica or the Red Hot Chili Peppers or whatever. And then they would intersperse that with, like, you know, En Vogue or, you know, whatever pop music was on. I only mention En Vogue because, man... Don't get me wrong, it wasn't the kind of music I was into, but those women were, like, really good looking.
Oh, yeah.
I know what Mike was tugging one out to now.
No, I really wasn't, but...
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that music, I mean, it was just like, damn. I mean, it's like, you know, and then, like, the videos, you were like, they left nothing to the imagination there, Dylan.
But you think about it, though. I mean, like you just said, those were the kind of videos.
That's what I was doing. You know, I'd get home and watch, you know, flip on MTV and whatever they were playing, you know, whether it was Guns N' Roses or, you know, Metallica or, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and then Nirvana would come on. You know, that's, you know, that was what was influencing what I was listening to.
Oh yeah, big time. But you think about the videos that were on at that point too. Like you said, you know, they had what, Aerosmith, you know, more mainstream stuff, and you know, maybe, you know, like you said, Chili Peppers, Guns N' Roses, tons of big hair bands and all that stuff. And then
whose, you know, popularity was waning big time.
But well, you know what was crazy about so many of those hair band music videos? You know what a lot of them were? They were just performance videos. You know, oh, what yeah. I mean? Like, it just like showed them like live in concert, and right. They would, you know, put the studio track on top of it, you know? And it was just like, it wasn't really, you know, obviously live in concert, but that's, I mean, it was like kind of like the easy way out. You know, oh, there's very definitely. Few of those bands that would actually do like a, you know, like a long form video, or, you know, do something actually, you know, creative with it.
Yeah, but my point was, is, you know, you had all that stuff that you would normally see on there and that you were used to, and then every once in a while, you know, one would pop up. Well, one wasn't a typical video that would pop up during MTV's normal play.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, that's what I was kind of getting into, those, like, long-form videos, or those, right. those ones that told a story. Like, Enter Sandman, I mean, prime example of, you know, like, a music video that would, you know, also kind of have that story, you know, and... You know, the weird looking characters and the kid falling, you know, off the building and all that shit that was going on in that video, you know, and you'd be like, oh my God, what the fuck, you know, you would see all that. And then, granted, there's those songs on that album that they put music videos out where it was just kind of like a performance video. I think it was just to get the songs out there, you know, after Sandman yeah. just like blew them up.
Oh sure.
Yeah. So,
like you said, it was the quickest way to do it.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yep. Yeah. Because, I mean, they were just touring relentlessly after this album came out. What, for, I mean, what, like the next 3-4 years at least?
Well,
I
they would didn't say? Put out another album until 96, so.
Right. Right. So, what are your tracks that stand out on this album?
So, I like this album. Like, I do find myself going back and listening to it, but when I actually went back and listened to it more recently, I do think that there are some pretty weak tracks on here, especially the last two. I do not like those tracks at all.
You know what's funny?
Those are two of your favorites?
No. My Friend of Misery is one of my favorites on it.
Oh, I do not like
that. I really song. Dig that song.
I think I that really... song... I honestly think that song sucks.
Oh, I really enjoy that one.
I don't know. I just think, like, lyrically, even some of the better songs, I think, suffer from not, like, great lyrics. I mean, I like Enter Sandman, but it is also very, very approachable for them. I don't know, and just like, but then like, you know, we're off to Never Neverland. Like, it's not as cool as it sounded probably back in 91 when it came out. Like, for me, the songs that I like the most are Through the Never and Of Wolf and Man. Of Wolf and Man probably being my favorite song on the album.
You know what's funny? Is I was going to say, like, if I was going to pick like two tracks on this album that I didn't like, Don't Tread on Me and A Wolf and Man would be the two that I was going to pick.
Wow. I think that 50% is going to Mike.
This is funny. It's funny because the songs that you didn't like are the one, like, one out of the two that
I don't like. Don't
you
Tread
don't
on
like.
Me.
Well, I mean, you mentioned My Friend of Misery as one that you don't like, and that's one I like. And then you mentioned, A Wolf and Man as being one that you like, and that's one that I don't like. So we're almost kind of like in opposite corners here.
Yeah, and The Unforgiven isn't bad. I think it just unfortunately created a trend. But of, you know, the three Unforgiven songs, which I think is kind of crazy that there's three of them, this is
easy. Is it not the hokiest fucking thing ever that you could actually sequelize a song?
I mean, unless you're doing, like, you know, Another Brick in the Wall where it kind of works because you're telling a story. But, like, I don't know. Do The Unforgiven tell a story? I don't think they do. Or I just never gave it enough time of day to listen to the lyrics.
I don't know. I don't know. It just it kind of seemed a little lazy to me.
Anyway, I think the album is like, it has good moments, but and it's I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I do think it does get a lot of flack, but I can understand why you'll get a lot of flack. It is a huge departure from what they were, but I mean it's Metallica.
That's exact wording I use.
It's like they adapt. You know, maybe this is what you know, Lars and James wanted, and it just kind of was what it was. Although it is at times very hard to pick out the bass. I do feel like they were a little tough on poor Jason Newsted, and in the last one and this one.
Jim, what do you like off of this album?
Probably the one that sticks out for me the most, and I don't know why, but Nothing Else Matters.
Okay.
Because it has, like, I don't mind that one. It's like a decent ballad, but it's cool that they had, like, Michael Kamen doing the orchestral arrangements on it, which I thought was neat. Mm-hmm. He actually was the guy, if you've ever listened to or watched their performance of S&M, he's the guy that leads the orchestra that backs them.
Mm-hmm. He was like the de facto, like, oh, we need an orchestra for like a hard rock or metal band. That was like the guy to do it. Like, I think even Guns N' Roses used him at one point, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean he's no slouch. The dude knows how to put together, you know, knows how to run a symphony. I mean, and put together some really great music. Right. I know he did the soundtrack to Band of Brothers, which if you guys have ever watched that, it's got a great soundtrack.
I have, quite enjoyable.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, it's good, but definitely shows like some signs of weakness. It's definitely not their best album.
No, I didn't rate it as such.
At the same time, it probably is a very important album just because I can't think of a lot of, I mean, I'm sure there are, but I can't think of a lot of other bands where the fan base reacted in such a visceral manner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people literally are just like, I will not listen to Metallica after this album.
Right, right. I mean, if they're, you know, if I wanted to mention any songs off this album that I enjoyed, I really enjoy Sad But True. Jim mentioned Nothing Else Matters. That's one I really enjoyed. And of course, we kind of had differing opinions on this one, but I really like My Friend of Misery.
I respectfully disagree. I blame it on Jason Newsted because it's his only writing credit on the album, and it's the fucking worst song.
Wow, man. It's funny because I had heard that one just randomly. Like, I think I had my iPod on shuffle and it came up, and I was like, damn. I was like, I haven't heard this one in a while, and I'm just listening to it. I'm like, I'm really digging this one. And it's funny because you mentioned that, and then, like, you're talking about, like, how they, like, you know, some of the, like, longer songs and some of that. That's actually the longest song on the album. And I was like, man, I'm really digging this one. I really enjoy it, and I liked where it went. And then to hear you say that, it was kind of funny. But,
well, for as bad as that song is,
Well, how bad it is.
I think this is where we start to move into a bit of a dark time for Metallica.
It's funny because, you know, like when this next album came out, I was such like a staunch fan of it and enjoying it. Listening back to it, I wondered now, what in the hell were they thinking? Like, there's some moments on it that are interesting, but and there's a couple of songs on it that I enjoy, but part of me wonders, was it like the James Hetfield hour?
Yeah, it's, I mean,
they didn't write a metal album. They ended up writing like a hard rock album with some country and blues interspersed.
Southern rock thrown in there.
And we're going to discuss Garage Inc. here in a little bit, and you could probably understand where some of that influence comes from if you've listened to Garage Inc. because that shows you where that came from. That shows you where Load and Reload came from. But
well, I will say there's a load of something on the album cover.
Yes, there is.
Do you guys know what the album cover is?
Apparently, they had like a jam session, so to speak.
Sure, you could say that. What it is one of three photographic studies that Andres Serrano, who's a photographer, created in 1990 by mingling bovine blood and his own semen. It's not Metallica's jizz, it's the artist's. And they guys just thought that it was cool. Not James Hetfield. He didn't like it.
Well, so a bit of a jam session by the artist that they used, I guess.
I do not enjoy this album, but there's a couple of songs I like. For what it's for what it is, what they are, I like Until It Sleeps. I think that song works. I even like King Nothing, as stupid as the music video is.
That's one of the ones I really enjoyed.
I like King Nothing. I've appreciated it ever since I heard it when I was watching The Sopranos all the way through, and they were playing it in one of the episodes. And it's kind of it. I mean, some of the other ones are just kind of, they're not very good. I mean, I think
the last half of this album was so rough to listen to.
Because they're like, completely, they're just, it's filler. They're completely forgettable.
Like, the one that really gets a lot of criticism is Mama Said, because it's really a country song. The song that I really that you didn't mention that I like, I mean, it's funny you said Until It Sleeps, because I remember the first time my roommate in college heard Until It Sleeps, he's like Enter Sandman Part 2.
It kind of is.
Yes.
It's funny because at the end of King Nothing, you can hear James Hetfield say, "Never."
Yes.
It's almost like they're trolling the fans.
Right. But the one other track that I really do enjoy off of this album was Ain't My Bitch.
That's funny because I fucking hate that song.
The reason why I like it, I actually just like the it just gets me into it. I get kind of like into the album. Like, I'm like, oh, this isn't too bad. And then all of a sudden, like, 2x4 hits and the house Jack built come on, and I'm like, ooh. Like, the house of Jack Bell, it was awful.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's horrible.
And like the Outlaw Torn, which I actually, when I was listening to it, I thought it was the Outlaw Tom the first time through. But then I was like, oh, it just looks like an M. It's like, were they like trying to do like a Springsteen thing there? It kind of had that like sort of tone, but like if they want to do a metal version, it just... Literally, like, the first half of the album, I think, kind of works, with the exceptions of two, with, like, the first three don't, but if you cut the album in half and you just have the first seven songs, it's, like, a kind of a, it's a mediocre Metallica album. With the other seven songs, it's a bad Metallica album.
You could have, like, combined this with, the intent was that they were originally going to release Load and Reload together as one album, like a double album.
Oh, God.
They could have combined it into one.
And chopped so much of the fat off.
Yeah. One of the things, I was discussing this with my coworker, because he was like, man, you're listening to it. I was doing this a lot of this at work, like, you know, while I was working on projects and stuff like that. He's like, man, you're listening to a lot of Metallica lately. So I had to explain to him what I was doing. And I was discussing it with him after the fact. I was like, you know, Load and Reload, the thing about them is, it's like I said, was like, they really recorded like a hard rock, bluesy country album. It would have fit in with, like, if it was like Aerosmith or like Kenny Wayne Shepherd were recording these songs. But it was Metallica. It was just like, what in the hell is going on here? Like, you didn't...
Yeah.
Those were the two artists that came to mind. Like, when, like, listening back to this, going, this just doesn't fit.
Or like, or even like Alice in Chains, but they didn't do it the right way.
Right. So
I'm gonna take Jim's silence as just like, I think I know Jim did not enjoy listening to this stuff.
I gotta wonder.
You guys can't hear me? I made a couple comments.
We hadn't heard you.
No.
So what, Jim? I mean, take the floor, man.
I don't know. I did not, like Dylan's right, I did not enjoy Load and Reload at all.
Is there anything redeeming on it that you liked, or?
And don't get me wrong, it wasn't completely horrible, but yeah, I couldn't think of a way to describe it, but I think you hit the nail on the head when you said if it would have been something like Aerosmith would have done. That's like what I could never put my finger on with it. So, it just...
I don't even know if they're necessarily the right band. That would have done this, but like something that was like almost like a hard rockish band, like with like a little bit like of a bluesy tint to them, you know, like a bluesy country tint to them, you know. It just, but I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But there's bands that can do that kind of music, and even if I don't like it, it still works. Like Volbeat is a good example. They're like a country metal band, and it's not really my thing. But it works, you know, they were able to produce, like, you know, good stuff. Or even, like, I don't know, I guess, like, I was going to say Pantera again, but that...
You know who I was going to mention? You know who that might fit that vibe would be Tesla.
Yeah, I guess, maybe, but...
I know you had a bad live experience with them a couple of years back, but Tesla back, think about this. This was 1996.
What about
20 years ago? Tesla, about 20 years ago, they would have fit like right into this.
What about Black Crowes?
They put an album out right around that point. I'm sorry, Jim, what'd you say?
What about Black Crowes?
Nah, they're too hard rock, classic rock.
No, I mean, he's right there. Yeah, I could see.
Like, they maybe listen to some Black Crowes stuff.
If Black Crowes went like a little heavier than what they do, not by much, but just a little bit heavier, then yeah, you're right there, Jim.
Yeah, I really dig them, man. I love them.
Oh, they're fantastic. It's too bad they're not doing anything anymore.
I forgot to grab my notes when I was down there. You guys keep talking.
Okay, but you mentioned the Black Crowes. I caught Rich Robinson. He put together a band. It's basically like all the former Black Crowes members, except for Chris Robinson, called the Magpie Salute. I caught them at the music festival I go to, and they were fucking amazing.
I think Black Crowes are amazing. I love them.
Oh, I mean, they put out some great stuff. I mean, some really good songs. And it's just unfortunate that they couldn't just get along more. So, Jim, I mean, were there any songs on Load that you liked?
I didn't. It's not that I hate it. It just, like, you said it best. And, like, even me bringing up Black Crowes, it just...
Well, it just, I guess any ones that like, stood out to you.
What's that?
Any songs that stood out to you?
Nothing really. Unforgiven 2, 3, and 4.
That wasn't quite, we weren't quite there yet, but.
Uh-oh. But, I don't think there was anything stand out on it. Now, having said that, I mean, I don't think it was the worst piece of garbage that any band or whatever has put out. I remember when it came out and, you know, seeing an interview with them and the reactions that people were having, and they were talking and of course, you know, it was Lars speaking up or whatever. And they're like, we've done the hard rock, we've done the thrash metal, we've done metal, we've done this, we've done that. They're like, we just wanted to do something different.
Right.
And, I mean, I can respect them for that, you know, and in a way they kind of earned that, too.
But then do something that's not, like, so far removed from what you were. I mean, even the Black album, like, it's still Metallica. It's still metal. It's just a little bit lighter. You know, it's a little more mainstream.
But
this to me is straddling the line of just kind of tepid, you know, easy listening radio rock.
But it's they wanted to do something different. I mean, how can we sit here and say that, well, you should have done something like the Black? That's the sound. That's where they were at that time. That's where they were at as artists. You know, and they had done everything. They've accomplished what they wanted to accomplish. And, you know, can't believe I'm defending Lars, but they just wanted to try something different to see how it would go or how it would sound or how, if they could even pull it off. And obviously it didn't work very well. You know, and I've never seen anything, and maybe that's something, you know, to look up or research, you know, what the band actually thought about it after it was out. You know, there wasn't really good.
Oh, I'm sure they've said all the same shit like every other band has said about their band. Like, oh, everyone shits on that album, but, you know, I still love it because it was, you know, it was what we wanted to do at the time, whatever. Again, well, that's all fine and good, but.
Well, given what came after.
Well, and but that's my point, though, Mike.
Several years down the line. They probably were like, man, you know, we got away with Load and Reload.
Well, no, that's my point is they just, and I don't think they ever meant to leave the sound that they had. I really do think as a band, they just wanted to try something different and see if they could pull it off.
Sure.
And for them to go from what they are or what they were in, into Load and Reload, like you said, it's just completely different. It's almost like it's a completely different band.
And I'll even give you like a for instance of that. Like as a solo artist, Chris Cornell. I mean, we all like Chris Cornell, right?
You know,
singer from Soundgarden and everything. He had great albums with Soundgarden. He did some great stuff with Audioslave. He did some great solo stuff. And then you know what he did? He put out an album of like dance music.
Yeah, Scream.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was produced by Timbaland.
Yes.
And it didn't really work.
But you know what? I mean, he put it out because why? Because he could. And he wanted to just try it, right?
Right. And I think that's what they were doing. You know, most bands that are, I don't know, really a band like Metallica was, like, you know, even I think, and I don't know 100% how true it was because there's two sides of the story, but supposedly the only reason Neustadt left or got kicked out or whatever it was because he did that solo thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the band guys were in the band were like, we don't do that. We're it's the four of us. There's no solo acts. We're Metallica.
Which is fucking stupid if you ask me.
I agree.
I also think that they were very unfair to Jason Newsted because I think he's a very talented bassist, and you can barely hear bass on these albums.
But and I think, and having said that though, I think it was convenient too. I don't think he really ever did fit in with them. Talented musician, yes, but you know, I don't think he was ever the replacement they wanted him to be.
And, it's kind of funny because like live in concert. He was, like, the guy that was, like, all about the fans and stuff like that.
Oh,
and then,
yeah, he's always, like, up on, like, the edge of the stage. Yeah. He's doing the bass shit. He's, like, getting up there. He's really into it.
And then they kind of basically, like, in the background kind of shit on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and anyway, my point was that I started with was most bands will make one or two songs, like, on an album or two albums or something like that, where they make that one song they always wanted to do or always had just stuck in their head that they get the other band members in on. Well, the whole band was in on this, and they did two whole fucking albums, not two songs. You know, it just, I don't know, just, why? Like, well, Mike said, because they could.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, speaking of that second album.
I was about to say the same thing.
Well, as bad as Load was, I think Reload is even fucking worse.
Okay.
That's my opinion. I did not enjoy it.
I don't know who it was.
Reload. Again, there's a couple of songs on it that I think are okay. Like, I think Fuel, while kind of a modern day, you know, very, like, contemporary Metallica song, it works. It kind of has that old edge of theirs that was missing. And even the Memory Remains, which is really like kind of out there considering the fact that Marianne Faithfull does guest vocals on it, like it does kind of work because it's just kind of so weird, but it's still metal, and like her vocals are just so bizarre that it oddly like kind of works out, you know. But then you know, then you just get into shit like Prince Charming and like Carpe Diem Baby, and oh god, I thought Carpe Diem Baby was just so terrible, and then the fucking Unforgiven 2, like what the fuck is that?
Yeah. It really just like kind of used like the beginning part of Unforgiven
and then just turns into a really shitty song.
Yeah. I totally agree with you on Fuel. I really enjoy that one. And then the other one that I liked just on this recent, like this re-listen, you know, just last week was Where the Wild Things Are.
Now, I wrote that down on my list, but honestly, I can't remember if I even liked it or disliked it. I think I might have not thought it was that bad. Although, given the fact that it is Jason Newsted's only writing credit.
I knew you were going to say that.
It might be on the ladder, the fact that I'm willing to bet that I'll fucking bet that the farm on this one that I probably didn't like it.
I felt like I should grab like a bar of Irish soap, Irish Spring soap, like listen to the Low Man's lyric, though. I mean, that and the last track on this album, Fixer. Ugh.
Yeah, it's...
I couldn't... Cool. I'm listening to my iPod, I'm listening to Fixer, I was, like, kind of, like, counting down the seconds for that song to finish.
Oh, it's so long!
Yeah, that's longest, what I'm saying!
The longest song on the album.
Yeah, that one was pretty
horrible. Again, if you're gonna do that, do, like, a kick-ass instrumental. Do a song that's gonna work as your last song, and don't do the fucking Fixer.
All right. So it begs the question: Could they have combined Load and Reloaded just into one?
Well, yes, that's what I was gonna say a little bit ago. If they would have got rid of the, I don't know, who am I to say which songs are garbage or whatever, but the lesser songs and made one album. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I don't think it's like. Throw it on the ground, stomp on it, and spit on it. It's not the sound for me.
But, no, that can go to some other album.
But it would have been a hell of a lot better album if they would have trimmed it down and put it.
So what's mind blowing about? I mean, as big as this band was at the time, this album sold 4 million copies.
Like quadruple platinum. That's nuts. Yeah.
All right. So,
but I real quick though,
but there's a lot
and
of
I,
people
I,
that liked it though too.
There were parts of it that I enjoyed, and back when it came out, I was like, "Oh yeah, I'm all about this one." And now I listen to it, and I'm going, "Ooh."
It was definitely a way to bring in like a younger fan base. Although, again, like I wonder, like with those listeners when they listen to this, and if they said, "Wow, this is great," And then they go back and listen to something like, you know, fuck, like Kill 'Em All. They're going to be like, what the fuck is this? You know, it's like showing somebody like the new Star Wars movies. And they're like, all right, now it's time to watch the old ones. And they're like, what's this? It's boring, which I don't understand. But whatever, that's a whole other conversation.
Right.
But yeah, real quick, I had read an article about Load and Reload and like if they were actually like as bad as everyone said and how they could be fixed. Looking at the track listing real quick, I think if you took the first half of Load, like, and get rid of, you know, you could keep the first seven songs, even though I don't think they're that good. You know, you could take the first seven songs and then tack on Fuel and The Memory Remains, and you have, like, a mediocre, but not a completely terrible, like, Metallica album. And if you must, you could put The Unforgiven 2 on there, but... I wouldn't, personally.
You would have to put it on there, because then when we get to the Unforgiven 3...
No,
You can't have... Oh,
no, I disagree. I disagree.
But no, you can't have a 3 without a 2.
Sure you can. You just don't do 3, but I'll get
to that. but no, I mean, if you're going to put that on an album, you can't have a 3 without a 2, technically speaking.
But we'll get to that when we get to Death Magnetic.
Okay. So
all right.
But so before we get to the real elephant in the room, I think we need to take a break and actually discuss something that I think was quite enjoyable that Metallica did.
And I agree. I know where you're going.
How can we not talk about Garage Inc.?
I think it was awesome.
I thought it was I thought it was a mixed bag.
So now here's the thing, is it's a really interesting concept that they did. The fact that they did like a two disc set, and I mean, holy bloated two disc set, 27 tracks on this thing. The first disc being recorded in all in 1998, and then the second disc recorded almost from the beginning. I thought it was kind of an interesting collection to listen to and to listen back to. And one of the things that I really enjoyed even back then and now is understanding this was really like the roots of Metallica. Like what you're hearing is what they were influenced by.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that there are a couple of, I had kind of forgotten that it was a cover album. And then I was reading through, I'm like, oh, duh, this is a cover album. And well,
how far along did it take you to realize that? I mean, did you get to Sabra Cadabra and go, oh, this is a Black Sabbath song?
No, I think I was skipping around a little bit. Okay. But I was like, where? I'm like, they did. I don't. You know what it was? I got confused between this and S&M. I thought S&M might have been the cover. And then I was like, no, that's the live one. This is the cover album.
Right.
So I thought some of their covers were good. I thought some were kind of meh. What is funny is I did write down initially that I thought the song Merciful Fate was too long. And I'm like, well, wait, that's a bad criticism because that fucking song originally is probably too goddamn long.
Right.
But that's like, you know, it's a King. Oh, it's King Diamond's first band, Merciful Fate.
Right, right. Which that was part of the 98 series along with Sabra Cadabra.
Not one of my favorite covers on the album.
But one of the things, I mean, I mentioned Low Man's Lyric on Reload. There's a song on that the first disc called Whiskey in the Jar.
Yeah, which is
a Thin Lizzy song, right? But very Irish kind of.
Technically a traditional.
Yeah, like a traditional Irish folky kind of song, right? So you kind of get the idea, well, wait a second. Maybe that's where they were headed with that, right? The other one that I really dig on this, and it's kind of it's kind of very, well, there's a few different things on this album. I won't mention Loverman because I don't fucking get that one. But the one that I really dug.
Oh, and the Nick Cave cover?
Yeah. And you guys probably won't be surprised by this. It's the Lynyrd Skynyrd cover, Tuesday's Gone.
You know, I actually didn't mind it. And I'm no fan of Lynyrd Skynyrd, but I didn't mind this one for some reason.
It actually may have almost been my gateway into like almost like the Southern rock blues kind of thing. Especially kind of getting into like some of Skynyrd stuff. And it might actually be my favorite Skynyrd song. But what's curious about that one, I don't know if you know all who played on that one. It's really a who's who of like metal hard rock musicians. You get Pepper Keenan sang on that. I'm sure you know who he is, right, Dylan?
Nope.
He's the singer of Corrosion of Conformity.
Oh, I know COC.
Yeah, Pepper Keenan, singer.
But I didn't know that he was in the. I didn't know his name.
Okay, Jerry Cantrell. I know you know who Jerry Cantrell is.
Well, Jerry Cantrell and Sean Kinney.
And Sean Kinney. I was going to get to Sean Kinney. Don't you worry. Martin.
I was very worried.
What?
Nothing. I was fucking with you.
You said you were like, worried. You were like, he said I was very worried.
I was like, oh, I was very worried.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Once again, Mike just decided to ignore my sarcasm.
Yep.
That was sarcasm?
Classic Crandall gloss over.
There's another one.
Jim Martin from Faith No More.
Okay, great band.
Yeah, another band I really enjoyed.
John Popper from Blues Traveler.
Is he the Blues Traveler?
He's the harmonica player, man. He plays some killer fucking harmonica on this track. And then Gary Rossington, who is playing... What's funny on the Wikipedia page, they call it additional guitar.
Yeah.
He plays guitar on that track. He's from Lynyrd Skynyrd. And then Les Claypool from Primus plays banjo.
You know that him and Kirk Hammett are like really good friends, right?
Oh, I'm not surprised.
So you want to know like one of the greatest Metallica stories of all time? So I think it was, I forget at what point in their, I could probably find it on here, but at one point in their career when they needed a bassist, and I don't know if it was after Cliff died or if it was after Newsted left the band, that they were, I would say it was probably closer, it was probably after Cliff died when they needed a bass player. Kirk said, "Oh, I know this guy, Les Claypool. He's a great bassist." And they're like, "We'll bring him in." So they bring Les Claypool into the studio, and he played for them. And they said, "Dude, you're too good to actually be in this band. Go do your own thing."
I could totally see that happening.
Which I'm like so happy because I fucking love Primus. But that's so, that just cracks me up.
I'm mystified by Primus. I just don't know what it. I don't get it. I
love them so much. It's weird. I can't really put my finger on it and explain why, just because I think they're great.
I really dug the, I did really dig the Willy Wonka thing they did a couple years back.
Primus sucks.
That was Jim gets it.
Yeah. I did see them live once. I saw them at a music festival. That was kind of interesting.
I've seen them three times.
But like at that first disc, I mean, all the stuff was like from 98. And there were some interesting things on there. I know before we kind of started recording tonight, Jim, Dylan and I were talking about Turn the Page.
Yeah.
The Bob Seger classic, I would say. And Metallica, I think, actually kind of did it justice.
Did they do it justice for all?
I was just going to say, no pun intended.
Waka waka.
I like it. I definitely heard it on the radio a lot, but I enjoy it. I actually think that it just, it works well.
It does. It works really well.
So the second disc is kind of more of a historical look at some of the things that Metallica had done. And I think one of the reasons why they put this Garage Inc. collection out was because so many people were bootlegging the fuck out of Garage Days and Garage Days Revisited.
Yeah.
Because they weren't available, Dylan. You couldn't get them in, like, stores or anything like that. So it was getting bootlegged the fuck out of. And, I mean, they were finally just like, you know what, screw it. We're just going to re-release this, but we're going to add some shit to it. If Metallica's done anything over the years, I think it's like they're always like, hey, you know what, let's just put this shit out again. It was like, we know people will buy it, but it's also because, like, you know, people are getting, like, lesser copies of this. Like, they're getting a copy of a copy of a copy of this thing. So let's just actually put it out and, you know, get something tangible into the hands of the fans, and it will actually sound like what we intended it to be. Which I think is actually kind of really cool in that sense.
In terms of, like, the stuff on the second album, I like their Killing Joke cover, The Weight, because I'm a big Killing Joke fan. I think that's pretty good. They're like clearly very good at emulating Diamond Head, because they obviously love that fucking band.
Yeah, I was gonna say Am I Evil, mentioned on the Kill 'Em All.
To the point that there's three covers on here from Diamond Head. I'm kind of on their Queen cover, because I don't know. I don't really know too many Queen covers that I think translate well.
That's a tough band.
I like that one.
Like, I think they could probably do some good covers. I just don't know a lot of bands that could do a good Queen cover. Like, Nine Inch Nails did a good Queen cover. I can't think of too many other bands that did a good Queen cover. And then four Motorhead's songs.
Yeah.
So, it's a mixed bag for me, like I said. I don't think the drumming is particularly good in it, honestly. Especially, like, in the first one. Because I know, like, the other stuff was kind of recorded, like, earlier in the years, but I think that the 98 stuff, I don't think the drumming is very good on it. I think it's probably some of Lars's worst drumming, and not just, like, in terms of him as a drummer. I just think the sound of it is really bad. And also, I think the album cover is fucking stupid.
Wow. Tell us how you really feel about it.
Well, it's funny because they just look really silly in it. Like, they're all like, man, we're tough mechanics, you know? Like, they look so hillbilly-ish. But what I think is particularly funny is that Newsted is so close to the front of the album, and the other three guys are kind of standing in the back. So it's almost like you could tell that Newstead is, like, clearly not, like, an integral part of the band.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. I see what you're saying. And I was like, I never really thought of it that way, but yeah, you're kind of... Like,
I think
Lars even has, like, his arm on Kirk's shoulder, and James is just kind of sitting back there, and they're like, no, Jason, you go ahead. You stand right there. Yeah, yeah.
But again, what's funny, too, is
that, I'll probably kind of, like, laughing behind his back.
I think we should try and reproduce this picture.
Well, who's gonna be? Is it gonna be the three of us in the front,
Dylan's gonna be standing up front, and Jim and I will just be standing in the back, kind of laughing at Dylan.
I'm down with it.
Either that, or we could get, depending on who's around when we're there, we could get Paul or Chris.
Maybe.
But what else I think is funny is that, like, it's like James and Lars are, like, staring right at, like, you know, the listener. And Kirk is like, either like, yeah, Kirk, you're with us. And he's sort of just staring off into nowhere, almost like, I don't want to be part of this drama. You know, Kirk always struck me as the guy in the band that was always like, I don't want to be part of this. Like, just leave me alone. I just want to play guitar, you know?
All right. So the one other thing I want to mention, I found, you know, the thing about, like, this album and the thing that kind of always intrigues me, like, when I, like, find an artist, you know, whether it's Metallica or it's a, like, a blues artist, is, like, going back and, like, finding the stuff that influenced them and listening to some of that stuff. Well, right about the time that Garage Inc. came out, I don't know who the fuck put them out, but I grabbed them off my shelf. There's these two, a two-volume set that came out that was called The Metallic Era. And it's all, like, the original songs that were on Garage Inc. done by the original artist.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought it was a really neat collection, you know? Like, I mean, you get all sorts of stuff, like the Diamond Head stuff and Budgie doing Crash Course and Brain Surgery, the Killing Joke doing The Weight, Anti-Nowhere League doing So What. I haven't listened to these in ages, but I thought it was kind of just like a neat thing, you know, like it kind of, I remember buying these back in the day going, oh, this is really sweet. You know, kind of give me an idea of what these guys were listening to when they kind of developed Metallica as the band that it had become. So it's really kind of a neat thing. I don't know if you've ever listened to any of, like, the original stuff, Dylan or Jim, but, maybe to check out.
Yeah, that's part of the, probably, I'm not a big cover person, but I really did enjoy this, and like you said, I think it did need a mention. But
oh, most certainly.
And I think the reason I enjoyed it was it wasn't just it being a album of covers, it just wasn't a cover that they did. You know, it wasn't a song cover on one of the albums or whatever. And like you said, it was what influence them. I think that's why it came out as well as it did.
Right on.
But
you know, given the fact that we like that so much, obviously we need to talk about something that we probably all don't like that much. I mean, but I'm not going to speak for you guys.
Well, I was going to ask you guys, do you want to stick a pin in it?
All right.
Well, I know I'm keep yawning and I'm fucking exhausted. And I think this has been a great one. I've enjoyed this.
All right. So, I mean, we're finishing this episode just with Garage Inc., I think. We're going to put a pin in this. You're going to hear what we think of not the final three, but the next three albums that Metallica's put out on the next episode of the podcast.
Including a real shiner.
What, the Blue Man Group album? The Stomp album? Wait, I'm confused. What's the name of it again? You'll hear what we have to say about that one, I think. If you guys don't know which one we're referring to already.
Dylan loves it.
Oh my god. I don't even want to get into it because if we start talking about it, we're gonna start talking about it, Jim. You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't know what you're saying.
But you'll hear on episode 71, we'll get into that one and we'll get into some other stories and some other stuff that's going on. Maybe I'll talk about the Ring of Honor event I'm going to tomorrow night. You never know. You never know what might happen.
Hey, real quick, though, can I Can I show you guys one of my favorite Metallica moments of all time, though?
Did you have the devil horns or something? Or
No. I this is just one of my favorite Metallica moments of all time. I just sent it to you in the in our Facebook chat.
Oh, fuck. Is this from that MTV Icon thing?
Yeah, we need to watch this real quick.
I think I know this one already.
Oh my god, just look how silly they all look.
I like the security guy, like the pimping guy, like, or whatever the fuck he is. In the gold hat.
Oh my god, James looks so silly. Yo, you know he's high as fucking hell.
I love the guy in the gold,
You want to talk about the least Metallica thing you could do? Oh, man.
His shirt's pretty awesome that he has on.
It's so
I love the artwork.
Lars is like, I hate this. Like, I hate everything else in life.
You know what's funny about that abomination? Is that was only 1 minute and 20 seconds.
But you know what? Here's... This will be my last point about this. Or about Metallica for the evening, is that is just so ludicrous.
Wait, no, that's Snoop Dogg. Ludicrous is somebody else. That was Snoop Dogg.
Okay. you guys were going to say
waka
that. Waka waka. That is just so bizarre that even though it technically is just, it's bad, it's just kind of so awful that it's just great. It's so funny. It's not Avril Lavigne, which is... When she did Fuel, it's just like, what? Why? So, anyway, that's just one of my.
I feel like we'd kind of need to watch Avril Lavigne do Fuel now.
I don't.
You want to? You want to open that up? You want to use that as our open up for the next segment?
Yeah, let's do that.
So, there's actually one other Metallica song that I want to talk about on the next episode, but we can talk about it on the next episode.
Yeah, wait till we get to Snoop Dogg's. Artist anthology, and we review that.
Dude, I've never listened to, like, what's your favorite Lavigne?
What did you say?
Oh my god, what did you just say?
What'd you say, Mike?
I'm watching Avril Lavigne now.
Oh.
Alright, well, we'll watch it again next episode.
The band sounds great. So, yeah, we'll get back to Metallica, and you can imagine where we're headed next after Garage Inc. Next episode. So if you want to check us out on Facebook, see what we're up to, where we're going. New Jersey! Can't wait, man! It's going to be awesome! You can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/JimsBBQPod.
If you want to follow us on Instagram and Twitter and see if Dylan's still alive, you can follow us on @JimsBBQPod.
You could also email us at jimsbbqpod@gmail.com. Or get the episodes fresh from the grill at www.jimsbbqpod.com.
And don't forget, you can also rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Much to Jim's.
Ugh.
Ooh, yeah!
Oh, was that Mott?
Nice. Alright, I'm going to bed before I pass out, boys.
Well,
until next time. Keep rocking.
Yes.
No, thanks for late, visiting. Bro. That Jim's was the fucking BBQ. Worst sign off ever.
Thanks for visiting Jim's BBQ, where we always give you fuel and fire and everything you desire.
Fucking bovine semen.
And oh bovine God. Semen. I think that might be the name of the episode.
Definitely would be a good one.
Bovine semen part 1.